young lady in a wheelchair. At nighttime, it's real hard to get around on the sidewalk because that's the only place where we can lay down and sleep at and be at. And so, unfortunately, it's real hard for her to get around. So, I mean, they made the private security made a big stink about it, and the Portland police made a big stink about it. So now, when she has to get around, we have to pick her up, we have to carry her and carry her a wheelchair from point A to point B because, you know, they trespassed her. And so now, after you get that official warning, mm-hmm. then next time they catch you in the parking lot, you're subject to arrest.
And so what is the scene down there like? I mean, how many people are down there right in this particular time?
Well, the whole block is filled with sleeping bags and homeless people because, I mean, it's under the bridge, so it blocks out from the rain, the wind. And so there's a lot of us. And lately, you know, the private security has been coming and taking pictures of us and writing people citations, trespassing citations. They've been pretty much just harassing us. I mean,
and who does the private security work for?
I believe they are parking security
for the parking lot.
Yeah, they monitor the parking lot.
Okay. Let's bring in Chris Meisner, because Chris, you are part of Right to Survive, and you have been monitoring some of the increase in homeless sweeps. Do you want to tell us what your thoughts are on that?
Well, the homeless sweeps, just they flat out need to stop. We've pleaded with Mayor Hales quite a few times, and that's pretty much getting nowhere. I mean, we're probably left to go with other avenues. I mean, Night Strike is an outfit that every Thursday they go down, they do haircuts, they provide food, clothing, foot care underneath the Burnside Bridge every Thursday. Well, they took a month and a half little break, hiatus type deal. And January 15th, the first night that they came back, me and a fellow dreamer, I stay at Wretched Dream too, Bill, we were down there and getting some food and whatnot, and as we were getting food, we noticed the police come down NATO Parkway like three times they passed by, and every time they get to that area, they'd slow down and look real hard. Okay, now we didn't stay there the whole time that the whole event was going on for Night Strike. We left after we got our food, and we heard afterwards that 15 minutes after Night Strike was done doing their thing down there, I mean, they had 300 brand new mummy bags that they were handing out there. And 15 minutes after they were done and everybody got their gear, you know, good brand new gear, they were happy, they were going to go get bedded down. 15 minutes after that happened, 6 to 8 cop cars showed up and swept that area, and also arrested 5 people. So that's brand new gear, just immediately thrown away, gone to waste. And also, we at Right to Dream 2, we take donations, and through those winter months, the Christmas months, we had an abundance of donations come in. We went online and requested, and great turnout. Hundreds of people turned out. It was phenomenal. Thank you so much for those people. And we do our own outreach. We go out and we get people geared up, bundled up, sweaters, jackets, blankets, and we get them geared up. And 2 days later, we see them. This lady out in front of UGM just had her stuff sitting there real quick, and she went around the corner into UGM to get something to eat really fast and come back to her stuff. Wasn't gone for more than 15 minutes. The cops come by, see her stuff laying on the side of the sidewalk, call Clean and Safe. Her stuff gets scooped up, junked, and thrown away. she comes back with her hands up there and is like, what did I do to deserve this type of thing? And it just really turns the stomach. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really does. I mean, the degree of humanity or lack thereof is really revolting.
So when a sweep happens, people lose their stuff.
If you get arrested, if they give you a set amount of time usually to pack up your gear and get out of there. If you don't have most of your gear packed up in that set amount of time, then they'll come start grabbing your stuff. Yeah, and I call them clean and steal, because that's what they do. You know, they steal your stuff. I mean, and they have a main hub where you could go and talk to them and request to get your stuff back and stuff. But if you had a cell phone amongst your gear or an MP3 player or anything like that in your stuff, you're not going to get that back. That goes, oh, the employee, ooh, goody. I'll take that. You don't get those items back. And a lot of phones have pictures of people's kids on them that are hard to replace. And they don't get any of that back. It just gets gone.
What I heard about that is that when people go to Clean and Safe and say, I want my stuff back, they say, we need your ID, which if it's been stolen, you don't have it. Or you have to have receipts for everything that you're claiming. And who carries a receipt? I don't have a receipt for my cell phone.
And another thing is people's prescriptions.
Yeah.
People's prescriptions, their medications that they need to be on, psych meds, antidepressant meds, whatever, that get gone. And in order to replace that, I mean, those only get refilled once per month. And if their meds are gone, their meds are gone. They can't a person that needs those psych meds, he's going to go a month and have episodes because of what these sweeps are doing. I mean, I just...
Right.
It is a human right to sleep, and I don't understand why the city government wants to put this ordinance and just press that thumb down even harder on us.
And so the ordinance that we should probably mention here, is this under happening under Prosper Portland, or is Prosper Portland a plan for new increased sweeps and new ordinances?
As we understand it, just to give you some background that we know on Prosper Portland, February 3rd, Chief Reese announced, had a conference with the media and other community members, and announced this Prosper Portland. And, you know, when you first looked at it, it sounded a lot like what they've been, you know, the programs that they've been doing. So increased foot patrols. They're going to relook at the sit-lie ordinance, which they've done over many years. I mean, maybe it's 10 years on and off of the sit-lie ordinance. They're going to use a cleanup contractor that would take apart any homeless structures, they call them, which is, you know, tents for survival, and increase the use of the specialty courts. But the thing that really... I think is new about Prosper Portland that I noticed is that they're now going to start partnering with this local corporation called Thetis Corporation. And what it said in the paper was that Thetis Corporation has offered free services to the City of Portland Police to develop a tracking and assessment tool. As far as we understand it, if Portland gets this system, then Thetis is going to market it to other cities. So the Street Roots called attention to this organization, Thetis, and we, Right to Survive, started doing research into it. And it's pretty frightening to read about what this partnership is about.
What are some of the frightening aspects of it for you, Anne?
Well, the first thing that you find out if you do a search for Thetis, and for people out there that want to look into it, it's Thetus Corporation. And they are on First and Burnside. The first thing you find out is that early in their startup, they're about a 10 to 12-year-old organization, they got a big grant from the Central Intelligence Agency. And just reading about that made me, this was under the funding arm of the CIA is called InQtel, and that's where that grant is. It was very open in the Portland mm-hmm. Business Journal. They're very open about that. So we start doing more research into Thetis and come to find out that most of their contracting is with military, and then they also work with police. So they are marketing their analytics software to police and the military. They will. They have gone to conventions, the International Association of Chief of Police convention. They are the defense contractor. They work with the Army and other defense institutions, but they also have people that are former military intelligence officers in their firm. The other thing that was troubling to us is that one member of their firm used to work for the city of Portland for 20 years, and he now is working for them. Dan Vizzini joined Thetis Corporation in 2012 after a 26 tenure as a public finance and policy analyst at the city of Portland. So that's straight from their website. He leads the data analysis and training team at Thetis. So what we're concerned about when a company like this, first of all, how does the public monitor a private security, information security system? We'd like to call it surveillance. And what exactly are they offering? It's not clear to us what they're offering the police. So when you hear stories like K-Max and Krista's stories about, people's information being taken, we start to wonder about the connections. At this point, we can't say for sure, but we want people to be really aware, and we want the community to start responding to this and looking into it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let's ask you, K-Mac, what is your feeling about the aspects of surveillance that you've experienced so far?
I feel like they are a violation of our basic human rights. I feel like we have the right to live in privacy, and the Portland police throwing their weight behind a private security company is, I don't think that's okay. Because now they're making something, now our information is out there in the public, in the open, and I kind of feel like they're using our information for other things and not letting us know.
How long have you been living under the Burnside Bridge?
I've been living under the Burnside Bridge for the last maybe month.
And how much of the sweeping and the overseeing by these police have you experienced?
Well, when I first started sleeping under the Burnside Bridge, you saw them occasionally. But up recently, maybe starting a couple weeks ago, the private security are down there every week in the port, or every day, every night, and the Portland police are down there every night doing sweeps, getting people's information, names, running warrant checks, taking pictures of the homeless people. It's outrageous.
You're listening to A Deeper Look on KBOO Portland. I'm Kathleen Stevenson, sitting in for Linda Olson-Osterlin. And with us, you just heard from K-Mac, who lives under the Burnside Bridge. We're also speaking with Chris Meisner and Anne Trudeau, who are both members of Right to Survive. What do we want to focus on now regarding the security and the other aspects of this new program that's being laid out?
One thing that I just want to go into a little bit more detail about what Thetis is doing. What's different maybe about what the data that they're collecting. I mean, maybe if you give your data to the cops, they might have your picture, they might have your address. But the Thetis, their whole focus of their business is to do what they call integrated semantic solutions. And what that means is they're using non-traditional data sources. So they're working with the government geophysical geophysical data. So is that what, we're still figuring out what that means. But they really pride themselves on using multiple sources of data and correlating them. And why I'm bringing that up is that another concern that we have is if you go to a social service provider and you say maybe give them your health information, maybe you're having a mental health crisis, maybe you're, you give people a lot of information when you're trying to get services. We're concerned about that information being fed back and being become part of the police information. Joanne Hardesty has highlighted that somewhat with the behavioral unit. So we're seeing this coordination of information, and that's a severe privacy violation as far as I'm concerned. Again, we're still figuring out what they're using what for. Mm-hmm. I will say this, is that it does seem like a lot of their applications are military, and I get concerned about sort of that military mindset coming into policing and even just community services. I'm going to give you one example of that. When I looked on the Thetis website, they were talking about their work in Somalia. And they did a whole presentation on it. And they were saying, well, where do we get our data sources from? Well, the usual, maps, this and that. And then they said, and we can access anything on the web, including we can also access databases from aid organizations. And that really set off, I was like, a few bells for me, because when you're saying that someone's going in to do charity work, or to do some kind of service work, but that data then becomes a military or a police application, that has a lot of implications. People wonder why people, I hear this all the time, well, why don't people go to this and get services? There's a lot of reasons why people don't do that, but some of it is you're worried about your privacy being violated. The city of Portland is also working towards what they call an integrated data management services run by, it's called Service Point City Integrated Database, and it's run by Bowman Corporation. And in a year, they're going to roll this out where every social service organization is tied into the same system. So if you go to, let's say, TPI and get services, they'll know if you went to another place. We're concerned about that also. We need the community to ask the questions of city council, social service providers. Do you know this is happening?
Chris, you wanted to add something?
Yeah, that some of the touch base on what she was saying. It's like if you went to go get services from TPI and you were getting services through them and they kicked you out for some reason, that would negate you from going to join and using their services because you're part of that database. And it's just like what they have set up for CSL Plasma. If you blow a red flag donating plasma at one facility, then you're red balled for the whole spectrum of facilities. You can't go. And as far as I would really like to get out there that individually for the houseless community and our other houseless brother and sister, and please educate yourself. Know your rights, please. If you do not know your rights, stop by Right to Dream 2. We have all kinds of documentations you can pick up and educate yourself, because that is your first and foremost sword right there. Mm-hmm. I mean, cops come, we have information about Cop Watch on skills that they have set on how you deal with the initial confrontation of the police and other rights. So, yes, please be aware and educate yourself.
And K-Mac, it sounded like you knew your rights when you were approached, but you ended up giving over your ID. Was it, do you felt there was no other recourse?
Well, honestly, I felt like the Portland police officer gave me an ultimatum. Either give him my ID and so he can give it to the private security, or go to jail and have to deal with another crime. You know, so my major concern is that it's kind of like my confidential information getting out there to, citizens, private members of security. I don't think it's okay. I mean, we have a right to our privacy. People I don't know, knowing my name and, you know, my mailing address, I think that in the long run is going to create a big problem.
So we only have a few minutes left, and it looks like there's something you would like to make sure we cover here.
Well, I just wanted to talk about some things that people can do, because a lot of times we talk about how awful things are, but we at Right to Survive are really committed to a movement for housing justice and for all the rights of the basic human rights that people have, focusing on housing justice, but also the right to privacy. So we're having a meeting tonight. We have regular meetings every other Thursday. We have a meeting tonight at Sisters of the Road at 6th and Davis at 5 o'clock. And you're welcome. People from the community are welcome to join us and work with that. We have a lot of other projects that we do, but I'd like to focus on one in particular, and that's called the Under the Bridges Walk. And next Tuesday, we do these regularly too, on every other Tuesday night. Next Tuesday, we will be leading a walk under the bridges, and maybe Chris can talk about this more too. But what we do is we lead people in the community. Houseless, people who are housed, and we go walk under the bridges and go meet people that are living under the bridges. And we both do this as outreach, but also to get feedback. That's how we find out about the sweep sometimes, because a lot of us are in Right to Dream too, so we aren't getting swept there. But we find out about the sweeps, we find out about cop harassment, and we also let people know about their rights. It's also a huge, as a housed person, it's a huge education to go there and really see the conditions that people are living in.
And how do people, again, connect with that?
Okay, you would show up at 6 o'clock at Right to Dream 2 next Tuesday night. And we usually go out about 6:30 and walk for an hour or two in Old Town under the bridge and then across on the east side. And we'd love to have people from the community join us. It's an eye-opener.
It's a really, really good time. It's a really good time. For the Under the Bridge walk, you get to meet so many different people and hear about so much different things that might not touch you in every day. And you get a chance to make their day better, handing them food, handing them warm clothes, whatever. I mean, it's camaraderie. Right. I mean, it's something that it's just really a big sign that just down to earth, we're the same as you. You're the same as us.
Right.
You know.
It seems like it might be a way to break down fear barriers, because I think there are people who are afraid, and that would be a way that they would learn more about what people on the street are doing and what their humanity is. So.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Is there anything else? We have like maybe a minute or two here. Is there anything else?
I was just going to say on the Under the Bridge walk that I went on, that's how we started to find out about the sweeps on the southeast side that you've mentioned, is we started going and we're like, where are people? And then when we found them, they were like, oh, we heard this area got declared a homeless free zone. And that's how we learn about some of the ways that we learn. Sometimes people call, Right to Dream 2 or Right to Survive. But we heard they were doing major sweeps, so it gave us a finger on the pulse of what's going on. So that's great.
Yeah, it started getting scary when the usual route that we took, the people weren't there.
Yeah.
They were a couple blocks over this way, or and we're like, okay, why'd you move over here? So, you know, it's subtle changes, but it raises questions, and we get educated just as well, yeah.
Great. And if people want to learn more about this whole Prosper Portland program that the mayor or the chief of police has laid out, how would they do that?
Let me think. I think that we're going to be, if you go to Right to Survive on Facebook, it's Right T-O Survive on Facebook. We've been posting a lot about it there. And or you can come to our meeting tonight at 5 o'clock.
Okay. Got to go. Thank you so much to K-Mac for coming in. Thank you, K-Mac. Thank you, Ann Trudeau, and thank you, Chris Meisner. This is Kathleen Stevenson for A Deeper Look. Stay tuned. Coming up is Air Cascadia with Chris Andre.
And good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland Thursday morning on KBOO, a minute before 10 o'clock, and in 15 minutes on Flashpoints, these stories. Newly obtained documents confirm the Navy knew Fukushima releases dangerously contaminated U.S. sailors on the USS Reagan offshore from Japan. Also, an in-depth report on the nuclear negotiations between U.S. and Iran. At 11 on Between the Covers, host Leanne Krantz speaks with local author Dan Byrne about his debut novel, The Gods of Second Chances, from local publisher Forest Avenue Press. And at 11:30, the film show highlights this year's extended Cascade Festival of African Films, featuring a live in-studio interview with Burkina Faso's Apollina Traoré, director of the new feature film Moi Zafira. That's all coming up this morning, but first it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre, coming up next on KBOO. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support in our winter membership drive. If you missed it, it's not too late to contribute by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today.
Are we asking enough regular, ordinary Black Portlanders what do they want here in the city of Portland? Listen to the word on the streets from Black Portlanders around the city give commentary about their experiences growing up in Portland or making Portland their home and building new opportunities in a two-part special programming series called Ear to the Streets of Portland, What Do the Regular Citizens Want? That's Thursday, February 20th and 27th at 7 o'clock p.m. There's a strong history when it comes to the African Americans of Portland, and hear what actions people want for changes towards prosperity, stronger communities, and what it's going to take to heal from past pains. That's Thursday, February 20th and 27th at 7 o'clock p.m. right here on your community radio station, KBOO 90.7 FM, and online at kboo.fm.
Cascadia. This is February. This is Thursday, February 27th, 2014. And you are listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. Few headlines before we get rolling. We have an extraordinary guest today, two guests actually. Lynn Stewart is joining us. Nat, she was released from prison January 1st of this year, Ralph Pointer. Her husband will be with us as well. Longtime activists who have literally put their lives on the line. Lynn Stewart was very ill for a very long time, and while she was incarcerated, at Carswell Women's detention facility in Texas, which is a communications management unit. She had fourth stage breast cancer and was denied proper adequate treatment. This week's start had started out with an eye towards energy, and look where we are at the moment. Here in Cascadia, a few headlines, though, for us before we get rolling. The farthest right Republicans, how far to the right? Well, the Dorchester Conference, the GOP annual strategy, Bevan Hooker's weekend in Seaside. That crowd, three's a crowd, isn't it? So three conservative leaders in Oregon say that they'll skip the annual Republican retreat on the coast this year because the organizers have planned a debate, wait for it, over same-sex marriage. Just a debate. They've not passed a measure or signed off on it. Just a debate. And have circulated a video in which the conference founder reminisces about his favorite moment when attendees voted to oppose the ban on abortion. So, they're holding their own conference, three of them. In Olympia yesterday, Senate panel heard public testimony on a measure that would prohibit any Washington governor from issuing a death penalty reprieve until after receiving a recommendation from the State Clemency and Pardons Board. A ray of light. In European countries, the feelings about the death penalty are very clear and very strong, and the Europeans have thoroughly rejected it. We still, of course, the United States shares proclivity to put people to death with China and Iran. We're more or less pariahs in the rest of the world in that respect, and many others, I might add. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid has blocked a vote on a GOP alternative to a Democratic bill enhancing health care, education, job training benefits for veterans, and eliminating some of the improvements and slapping sanctions on Iran as well. It's a strange piece of legislation, and Republicans citing Reid's move were expected to rally behind a procedural effort to derail the veterans bill. Each party, of course, accuses the other of seeking partisan gain.